From WNYC, this is The Sporkful.
You know, this is reminding me of something I'm not proud to admit.
This is my friend Hillary Frank. She hosts a parenting podcast called The Longest Shortest Time. She has a 4-year-old daughter named Sasha.
Sometimes Sasha will be like, you know, I want more animal crackers. And I'm like, you've had enough animal crackers. We're moving on to something else if you're still hungry. And then she's kind of like stretched me to my limits so much that when she's not looking, I will sneak into the pantry and like scarf down some of those animal crackers myself. And sometimes she'll be like, I hear you making a crunch, crunch, crunch sound. What are you eating?
Right.
And I'm like, nothing, some grown up food. Like, why do I go for the animal crackers?
Anyone with kids knows that feeling. They leave you so burnt out, you just start putting food in your mouth without any regard for decorum or deliciousness. At a recent food event, I ran into former Congressman Anthony Weiner. Yes, that Anthony Weiner. He has a 2.5-year-old son named Jordan. I asked the congressman how he eats while parenting.
I often find myself scavenging the leftover food on my kids' plates.
Yes, of course.
When you swoop in, there's sort of a hierarchy of like how intact the food is versus how much it's been handled, possibly
right.
Put in the mouth, dropped.
Right, right.
Where do you draw the line?
Excellent question. Yesterday, I had some high-quality takeout macaroni and cheese that had fallen between his legs on his little jump seat. So when I picked him up and took him away to get cleaned up, it was sitting there. It's not even a tough call for me. I had a little macaroni and cheese off the jump seat. Between his, you know, who knows how many times he bit on it, but that was not that hard to call it. The macaroni and cheese is very good at this place.
Parents can stoop pretty low in our desperate search for deliciousness. Well, today on The Sporkful, we're going to lift ourselves up. I'll have more with Hillary Frank, plus what Indian culture can teach parents about scavenging from our kids' plates. Better Bites for Parents Everywhere, coming right up. Stay with us. This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman, and we're about to challenge your assumptions about consumption and drop a sporkful of knowledge on you. Because we're obsessively compulsive about eating more awesomely, and because if history has taught us anything, it's that the hosts of food shows need a lot of catchphrases. Lots to get to in today's show, but first, quick public service announcement. I know it's a long ways away, but we are already planning a giant Thanksgiving blowout spectacular here on The Sporkful, and we want your help and input for this special show. How do you know it's Thanksgiving in your house? What are the smells? What are the sights? What are the tastes? Maybe it's classic turkey and stuffing, but maybe it's something very different. Maybe your family came here from another country and incorporates different kinds of ethnic food. Maybe you're a vegetarian. I want to hear about your experience of Thanksgiving. I also want you to answer a very important question. What is your ideal Thanksgiving dinner bite? Describe it to me in detail. How is it composed on the fork? The order? Everything. I want to know everything about your perfect bite on Thanksgiving. Drop me a line, dan@sporkful.com, or give me a call, 908-9-SPORK-9. Look forward to hearing from you for the Thanksgiving special. Now let's go ahead and jump into today's topic for mastication and rumination, which is eating while parenting. Joining me now is my friend and colleague here at WNYC. She's the creator and host of a parenting podcast called The Longest Shortest Time, and she is Hillary Frank. Hey, Hillary.
Hey, Dan.
So, you have a daughter.
I do.
Sasha, she's 4 years old, is that right?
That's right.
I have Becky, she's 3.5, and Emily is 1. And every parent with little kids knows what it's like to like scarf down a meal standing over the sink. Like, it's one of the most degrading experiences. And it's so hard to find deliciousness. And as you're doing it, you're like, I'm not enjoying this. This doesn't taste that great. I should be appreciating this more. I probably don't even need this much food. I'm not even really that hungry. I don't want to throw it out, though. And anyway, I just have to get food into my stomach because I just need to get to bath time or whatever the next chore is.
Right. And because giving yourself sustenance is going to make you a better parent.
Right. Well, that's certainly true. It's like on the airplane, you know, put your mask on first. You know, I think it's okay to carve out those little moments for yourself.
even if I'm standing over the sink, I try to like lean against the sink to like take a little weight off. Maybe I'm not sitting down, but at least lean against the sink. And for that split second, look at the food and swallow it and pay attention to nothing but that bite. And I do think you get a little more enjoyment from it.
Yeah, well, that was one of my questions for you. How do you make those like 2.5 minutes over the sink as delicious as possible?
Well, I talk a lot on the Sporkful about sort of bite composition, how to put together the perfect bite. I think in that sort of over the sink eating situation, it's one of two things. Either you're kind of scarfing down leftovers that are quote unquote grown up food, or the situation I often end up in is you're eating your kid's leftover food. Right? I mean, I would love to see a study on, like, how many extra calories parents of young children consume just, like, eating the detritus, right? Because it's, like, oftentimes it's perfectly good food, so you feel bad throwing it out. But it's kind of not really enough, or it's been mushed around too much to pack it as leftovers. So you're like, well, if I eat it, I guess I'm not wasting it. But
so you're talking about eating food off of their plates?
Right, after they're done. They left the table. And I've actually established a hierarchy of young child's leftover foods. Okay. So number one, this is like the best case scenario, is food that's still on their plate untouched.
Yes.
It's just sitting there pristine.
Agreed.
Number two, on the plate, been mushed around with the hands a little. But nothing more.
Okay.
Still, not bad territory you're in. Next one down the hierarchy, food that's been put in the mouth and then returned to the plate. Either by accident or on purpose.
To me, that's called garbage.
So you don't ever eat any food that's touched your kids' mouths?
I don't.
Really? Okay, I'm not judging. In fact, people are probably judging me for questioning you.
I mean, so number one, it just sounds icky to me.
Okay.
Number two, I just feel like kids are brewing some kind of illness all the time, you know? And I see food with her saliva on it and I think, you know, I'm going to get strep.
See, that's so funny because I see food with my kid's saliva on it and I think this will strengthen my immune system. Exposure to this bacteria will make me stronger. Yeah, I mean, I just sort of trust my gut. Like if it looks kind of gross, then I won't eat it. But if it doesn't look gross, I will eat food that's been in my kid's mouths. And I'm not ashamed to say it.
That's like the reverse of the, what is it called? The like pre-mastication.
Right. I do post-mastication.
So it's like what? Okay. You got to tell me now. What have you eaten that's been in your kids' mouths?
Well, this, I brought a little experiment for you, Hillary. I brought props here. Don't worry. I'm not going to ask you to eat anything that's been in my kids' mouths.
Okay.
But this was one of the best case scenarios. I have here some graham crackers.
I'm scared.
Okay. First, I'm going to give you a graham cracker, untouched. I touch it with my finger, but it just came right out of the package.
So this is number two. Your finger has been in it.
But I'm not a child, so I'm clean. I want you to take a bite of this unadulterated graham cracker, and you tell me what you think of it.
It's good. It's a little. It's not as crisp as I expected. Is this a little? Has it been sitting around for a while?
It's been, yeah, it's the bottom. You got the bottom of the bag. I'm sorry.
No, it's good.
But is it a little dry?
It is a little dry.
Maybe a little brittle?
Yeah, it's a cracker.
Okay. But, I mean, would it be better if it were less dry and less brittle?
Probably not.
Let's find out.
Okay.
So now what I'm going to do to replicate a graham cracker that has been in my one-year-old's mouth is I'm going to pour a little bit of water out on a plate.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take this.
Okay.
I'm just going to dip it lightly in the water.
Okay.
All right. So now I just want you to focus on the textural difference between the first one that you said was a little dry and brittle and this one.
Okay. I'm going to close my eyes and I'm going to eat it. Damn, that is gross.
I think it's so gross. Much better.
You eat it. Tell me if you really believe that.
I think it softens it right up. It makes it more reminiscent of a graham cracker crust, a pie crust.
It makes it more reminiscent of a graham cracker that came out of a child's mouth.
What if we imagine it being coming out of your child's mouth? Less gross?
Super gross.
All right, Hillary, so continuing with the hierarchy of a young child's leftover foods, number four on the list is food that's been picked up and dropped on the floor. I might actually, where do you think, would you rather eat food that's been picked up and dropped on the floor or food that's been picked up and gone in the mouth and back to the plate? Basically, I'm asking you, which is grosser, the floor or your kid's mouth?
Kid's mouth. I'd rather have something off the floor.
That might be true. Maybe I need to alter my rankings. Next one down. Put in the mouth and then dropped on the floor by accident, either via the hands or because it fell out of the mouth. This is food that touched the mouth and the floor.
Mm-hmm.
But I draw a distinction between that one and the grossest of all, which is food that's been put in the mouth and then dropped on the floor on purpose.
Oh.
I think it's grosser if the food made it to the floor on purpose versus by accident. Because
yeah.
That suggests, like, you know, if it's been put on the ground on purpose, it suggests that the kid is playing with the food.
Mm-hmm.
Which means it was probably like mushed to oblivion before being dropped. And when it was dropped, there was likely like velocity was involved. Like
yeah.
It was hurled.
Yeah.
And that, I feel like that, even I won't eat that.
Yeah. I mean, I think probably a lot more food winds up in the garbage in my house or the compost than yours.
Yeah. But when you do eat food off your kid's plate, I do think there's a certain art to putting together the perfect bite. Usually you're eating it with your hands.
Mm-hmm. So you gather it up with your fingers and you roll it up like...
That's right.
Like a ball of Play-Doh and you eat it?
Sure.
Do you make balls out of things that are on your own plate or only things that have been on your kids' plates?
Mostly just from my kids' plates. It's sort of like a way for me to have fun eating their... leftovers.
Because it also sounds like quick cleanup of what's on there.
Right, that's
plates.
Right. And I'm also cleaning at the same time, Hillary. There's that benefit.
I think if it was like you were serving balls of food that you prepared that way on purpose, that sounds delicious to me. But somehow, or if you decided like with your own plate of food, somehow the like gathering stuff up off of your kid's plate and balling it up, just the whole concept just sounds yucky to me. So, like, does post-masticated graham cracker wind up? Do you, like, make a ball of that with strawberries?
No, that's more of, like, an on-the-go thing. My one-year-old's been in the back of the car drooling on this graham cracker, and now we get out, we're at the park. I don't want to leave it in the car. I don't want it to end up on the ground. I don't want to litter. I could carry it with me until I find a garbage can or put it in the cup holder until we get home, or I could just eat it. Like, that's the easiest solution here. Like, I'm 1% hungry, and I'm curious to know how this will taste.
Mm.
And I thought it was an interesting textural experience. Is it amazing? Is it delicious? Am I going to open a restaurant with, you know, saliva-soaked graham crackers? Probably not. But as a eating experiment, I enjoyed it, and I would consider doing it again.
Now that we've been talking about, like, eating stuff off of your kids' plates, I can think of one time that I've been really tempted by food that's been manhandled by my daughter. So
please tell me.
So, like, I have definitely developed a strong appetite for American cheese since she's been old enough to eat it. And I get excited when she asks for flat cheese. And she knows that, like, the flat cheese from the deli is better than the wrapped flat cheese.
Oh, very you know? Good. You taught her well.
Yeah, she agrees with that. And so, but when we go out, like, to a diner, her favorite thing to get is a grilled cheese. And probably it's mine, too. But sometimes I feel like, oh, I should get something more grown up than that. And so, like, especially if she's ordering it. But really, I'd probably just rather get the grilled cheese and the chocolate milk that she's getting. And so, but what she does, and so I'm like sitting there watching her eat it and just hoping that she'll leave some of it untouched.
Totally.
But what she does is she opens it up and she like picks out the cheese with her fingers. And so if I'm going to go at it, I'm going to have to deal with like the sandwich that's been picked apart with the cheese, but it's still going to taste good. And I have eaten that a little bit. I would, of course, prefer the one that she's sort of left, the piece that she's left untouched. And I try to sometimes just be like, hey, will you let mommy have a bite of that?
That was Hillary Frank, host of WNYC's parenting podcast, The Longest Shortest Time. As Hillary says, it's a 3 a.m. bedside companion for new parents. And it is a really great podcast. I hope you guys will check it out. If you are a new parent, you will find a lot of thoughtful and surprising stories to connect with. And even if you're not, if you just appreciate great stories well told, I think you will find common ground with The Longest Shortest Time. You can find it in iTunes, get it at the WNYC app, or at longestshortesttime.com. And hey, Hillary and I are doing a Google Hangout together. Wednesday, July 16th, 3 p.m. Eastern, we'll be talking kids and eating. We'll be joined by a pediatric dietitian. You can get more information and submit your questions at longestshortesttime.com. And hey, if even after all this discussion, you're still having trouble picturing my foodball technique and picturing me as a parent caring for other human beings, well, I have video evidence of both. There's a video to go with this podcast. Get it at sporkful.com. It's shot in my house with my real kids. No child actors. Real kids. Eating, being adorable, me feeding them, me eating off their plates. It's a lot of fun. You can get that video right now. Watch it at sporkful.com. Now, if my discussion with Hillary and the video still don't convince you that molding food into balls with your hands is just a great way to go, maybe 1 billion plus Indian people will persuade you. Coming up, I'll talk to WNYC's Arun Venugopal about using your hands to craft the perfect bite from your kid's plate or otherwise. And we'll find out how he's sharing his food ball technique with his 13-year-old daughter. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Sporkful from WNYC. I'm Dan Pashman. Joining me now is my friend and colleague, Arun Venugopal. He's a WNYC reporter and host of the Micropolis series. Hey, Arun.
Hey, Dan.
So I'm going to ask you to speak on behalf of all Indian people.
Absolutely. I do it all the time. Pretty well, actually.
Yeah. I mean, there's, as I understand, there's only a few of you, so it shouldn't be too hard, right?
You know what? There was a sort of like a straw poll. And I won.
You won.
I kind of locked it in.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah.
The reason why I wanted to have you on for this is you did a video for WNYC a little while back about eating with your hands.
Right.
Earlier in this show, I talked to Hillary Frank about how I like to form little food balls with the leftover foods sitting on my kids' plates. Now, I know that eating with your hands and forming food into balls is common practice in Indian culture, and I'm hoping that you can share some wisdom with me to help me make my food ball technique better.
Okay, got it.
So can you please just start off square one, explain the role of eating with your hands in Indian culture for people who have never heard about this?
Yeah, well, I guess basically there, even amongst Indians, there is sort of debate about who does and who doesn't or how Indian it is. I mean, after I made that video and we posted, there were certainly some Indians who were like, well, we don't do that up north. And other people were like, oh, sure you do. I've seen plenty of North Indians. I mean, I have lots of North Indian friends. But I guess the question is not whether you're eating, say, a roti, a kind of a bread, a chapati, naan, whatever it is, with your hands. That's a given because there's really no way of eating bread, Indian breads, without your hands.
It's sort of meant to be torn into pieces.
Exactly. The issue is over rice specifically. That's pretty much it. And, you know, how much you're willing to sort of like get down and dirty with that. But for me, growing up, I grew up in Texas. And I don't remember a time when I wasn't eating with my hands or I wasn't fed by hand, you know. So that's the standard kind of a thing. You see moms chasing after their kids trying to, you know, cram a ball of rice into their little mouths, and so it's just the norm.
And my friend Alap was saying that his grandfather, to this day, says that the food doesn't taste right if he doesn't eat it with his hands.
I do believe that, and I think a lot of people who kind of came out of the closet after this video to me and said, like, oh my God, thank you so much. I mean, it's true, it really doesn't, you know, and who might have otherwise been embarrassed. And they're like, no, it's just, you know, it feels a little alien to be performing for the public, you know, with the utensils when you know that there is a level of just, you know, dexterity we have with our fingers and it cannot be replicated with utensil. Utensil is a pretty cold way of mixing things together. You do, and your fingers are just incredibly nimble.
That's right. You can build your ideal bite to a much greater extent with your fingers than you can with utensils.
Exactly.
Right? Let's get into technique.
Yeah.
Okay.
when you are forming a ball, let's give me a classic combination of two or three foods that you would have on a plate that you would be forming into balls, and walk me through the process of exactly how you would do it.
Okay, so let's just take something everybody's familiar with. Dal and rice. The most basic combination of two things.
It's sort of like arroz con pollo of the Indian world.
Exactly.
Like you always hear these words together.
There you go.
Okay. Dal, just in case people don't know.
Lentils.
Saucy.
It's saucy, exactly.
Saucy lentils, right.
It's poured over that heaping pile of rice on your plate. And so here's sort of the two basic kinds of, I guess, differences in terms of technique. Some of us, like I include myself in this category, we use more of our fingertips, okay? Like, we're not really comfortable using our palms. It's just sort of something, maybe I guess you could say it's sort of like the gentrified aspect of our, it just seems a little unseemly. So
right. Isn't that funny? Isn't this the way in so many cultures, though, where it's like there are the North Indians who say, well, we don't eat with our hands. And then you're like, well, I eat with my hands, but I only use my fingertips.
Right.
I'm not like those savages who use their palms.
Yeah, exactly. I know. There's this whole continuum, right?
Right. Like everyone wants to split themselves into different groups.
Right.
Artificial, ridiculous constructs.
Exactly. I mean, I think, I don't even know. For me, it's just like, it's too far back in my past, in my childhood, for me to know if I made decisions or if I emulated, say, my sister, who's a few years older, or what. But my dad or other people would periodically correct us and say, like, that's really not the way to do it. If you really want to, enjoy your meal, you have to get your whole palm, your whole hand into this. And you're kind of sort of massaging this food together. And they do this kind of cool spinning thing almost, sort of like in the hand where the ball is being formed, kind of being spun with that hand as you're sort of spinning those fingers.
Almost like, when people have prayer beads in their
hands? Right,
the
rosaries.
Kind of rosary beads, and they roll them around like that, except you're doing that with rice and lentils.
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah. And, you might be combining multiple things, right? And even now, I'll sort of concede that I'm never going to be as good at forming that perfect ball of food as, say, my parents are. And I know that because occasionally my mom, even when we're younger, pretty often, she'd actually feed us, right? She'd be like, here, have some of this. And you're like, why the hell is this so much better when she feeds it to us? And she was like, they say that the oils on a mother's hand, sort of these very subtle kinds of things, I guess you might compare it to like pheromones or something like that. It's something that the child sort of at some basic level appreciates because essentially you're coming from her,
So you don't think that it was a physical technique. You think like this, you literally don't think that you could replicate her food balls.
I don't know. I occasionally when I'm eating, I'm like, okay, let me try to go. What is it that she's doing? I'm like, maybe it's 10% of this thing over here and 25% of the dal and then this much rice. And, let me just take a dab of that mango pickle and put it in there, because this is the way you see it. It's sort of this rapid, the hand is going all over the plate or, say, traditionally a banana leaf.
The way that your hands move
right
over these foods, I mean,
exactly.
It's almost like you're conducting a symphony.
Yeah, it really is. There is certainly something when you go to, say, a wedding or a feast where this is being done by hundreds of people, you get a sense of the people who are like, okay, I know what I'm doing.
Right.
You have no idea what you're doing. Just watch and learn, And then, so it's like the joke we make about people like that is, I'm looking out from my elbow all the way up to my hand to clean that thing off. So it's sort of like we're kind of making fun of them, but we also on some level know that they know something we don't. There's some sort of like, code.
Let's get back for a minute to the dal and rice.
Okay.
You're forming the ball of rice. Do you form it with the dal together into a ball, or you form a ball of rice and then dip it into the dal? How do you bring the two together? Because dal has sauce. It's saucy.
It's kind of funny you're asking me this because it's so, I guess, unconscious or whatever you call it, that I'm, thinking out loud as I'm saying this. You've got the fingers kind of molding it into a ball just enough so it's kind of got an adhesive quality to it.
So you use the sauce to help bind the rice together.
Yeah, I guess you could say that, yeah. I mean, the rice itself is, of course,
it's gonna
very
bind,
bindy.
Right.
Right.
And so I guess really what I'm getting at is, is it more that you take the starch and then run it through the sauces, or do you combine the sauce and starch together in the ball form?
You do it that way, yeah. You kind of combine it together, and you're making the ball out of the raw materials that you've kind of like lumped together.
And what would you say is the diameter of your ideal food ball?
I guess about a little over an inch.
Bite size. It's not like it's like an apple size.
No, you're not just
bite out of it and keep holding it in your hand.
You're not munching off of this huge thing.
Right, right, right. Okay. So you have a daughter. Mm-hmm. She's 13.
That's right.
You talked a bit about your parents, the way they ate with their hands. Now, you were in Texas, and it was the 70s. So I'm guessing that Indian culture and customs were not quite as commonplace as they are in Queens in 2014.
Yeah, huge difference.
How is it for your daughter today? Does she eat with her hands at home? Does she eat with her hands out of the house? How does that all work?
Oh, yeah, it's totally night and day. It's amazing that way. I mean, the difference in 21st century Queens from, you know, 1970s, 1980s, Houston, Texas, is just, it's an incredible difference because she has no self-consciousness about that. And she doesn't mind if friends are over, of whatever, whoever they are. She doesn't mind even in public or just talking about it.
Do you critique her ball formation technique? Do you give her tips?
I don't think so. I don't think I've paid much attention to it.
Arun.
Yeah. Should I be? I'm sorry.
Oh, I mean, of all the things you could be. You just finished talking about how your mom, your parents made these food balls that were so memorable that you couldn't replicate.
Right.
Now, someday, 20 years from now, your daughter could be saying, you know, my dad always made the best food balls, but I never learned how to do it. I don't know how he does it that way.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you're right, Dan. I feel so like, I don't know. I guess I've really kind of dropped the ball on her, haven't I?
Well, it's not too late.
It's not?
She's only 13.
Oh, I don't know. She's so independent. You know the kids these days.
Well, yeah. And also, she's entering those teenage years, so it's not exactly the best phase of life for you to be lecturing her on how to eat.
She's still relatively, I guess you could say, un-teen-like in that sense. So maybe you're right. Maybe there is a window.
This is your last chance. In another year, it's going to be over.
Right. Darling, please listen to what I have to say. I have so much I want to pass on before my time is gone.
Shut up, Dad.
You're so uncool.
I know. So do you think that the shape of someone's hands and fingers affects their ability to make better food balls? Like, you have you seem very dexterous. Like, your hands... Just when you're making these motions, your fingers kind of bend back in interesting ways.
Oh, okay.
They bend sideways.
Uh-huh. You almost like my fingers.
It seems like you have extra knuckles or something.
Yeah, I do have an implant. I have a couple prosthetic knuckles. it was an experiment.
Yeah.
It's funny you say this because so there was a book I read literally like 20 years ago. There's one of the most famous Hindu saints. His name is Swami Vivekananda. Late 19th century, he's a big deal for a lot of Hindus. And basically, I was reading one of his books, and he was saying, yeah, I mean, he had spent some time in Chicago and in the Midwest in the 1890s or so. And he was like, I think the reason that Americans can't do it or what the white man can't do is because we have chubbier fingers. And so basically, you know, you guys have skinnier fingers, so the rice must fall through the cracks. And he said this completely dead serious. And I'm reading this, I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. I'm like, you're this brilliant man and you actually think that there's like a physiological difference here?
Right.
He was just kind of thinking aloud, but it's funny that he actually committed this to print in this classic seminal work of like, you know, yoga and the way to spiritual liberation, all that stuff.
Well, I mean, but look at us Americans now, Arun. I think the fat's on the other hand.
That's right. The fat's on the other hand.
I think the time is now, Americans. This is what we've been training for the last few decades. Look at all the hand fat.
You've plumped up the fingers.
That's right. We're ready now. Rice is not going to get through these American hands.
The time is right. That's I think so. Maybe I should start evangelizing to your people.
Yeah, I think you need to write a sequel.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I'll start calling you Swami Arun.
Yeah, I'm. That's great. I love it.
All right. Well, Arun Venugopal, WNYC reporter and host of the Micropolis series. You can follow him on Twitter at Arun. That's ARUNNYC. Thanks so much, Arun.
Thanks, Dan.
Well, friends, thank you, as always, for tuning in. A few quick but important promotional reminders. There is a video of me making food balls and eating with my children in my home, my real, actual children. Yes, it is my shameless attempt to use my children to get you to engage with me. Check the video out at sporkful.com. Also, the Google Hangout. Hillary Frank and I doing a Google Hangout about kids and eating. Wednesday, July 16th, 3 p.m. Eastern. Get more info and submit questions at longestshortesttime.com. And one more note, ahead of Thanksgiving, I want to hear from you. What are the smells, the sights, the sounds, the tastes that you associate with Thanksgiving? How do you know that it is Thanksgiving in your house? And what is your perfect Thanksgiving dinner bite? Describe it to me in detail. Dan@sporkful.com, 908-9-SPORK-9. This show is a production of WNYC and The Sporkful. It's produced by Kristen Meinzer. Special thanks to Chris Bannon.
Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.